Looks like there's only one person here. Hello? Hey, Gregor.
Hey, and another.
It's just the two of us. I mean,
So far, so
not so far. Oh, it's early. Ah, okay. I'm 3 minutes early.
2 minutes, 2 minutes, probably.
Ah, okay. But I thought for a second that there was something not working.
No,
I'm in a wrong meeting. Instead, no, it's me. I'm early.
but there was few meetings, I mean the Zoom addresses, because so frankly I don't know if we're 100% on the right one, because it was one for let's say PI, and then it was another for kind of general meeting of everyone. So we have to be sure, because if there are only two of us on this one, or maybe there are three.
Hello.
Hey, Ocean.
Hello.
Hey, Ocean. So probably we are in the right one.
Oh, I just clicked on the one that came out with the notification. So I hope it's the right one.
I have only this one on my calendar, so must be.
Okay, so we have to wait for others to join us.
Today's alpha presentation. Woo!
Also be. Let's see. Yeah,
Hey, come on, positive, right?
If nobody else is joining, and we will have a private screening for Angelo.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, let me see if there's
We are
others.
dangerously close to 6 p.m. But Angela, I haven't seen any email from Paul
I
effectively.
did not see email from Paul. I see Jim. Okay, at least there's Jim. That's
Oh, this is our
great.
team, right? This is our team at least. So I'm not surprised you are connected to this meeting, but I haven't seen any email from either Paul or Michelle, I think, right?
Well, I can always at least send a reminder to the RH people. That's easy enough.
Would be strange, frankly, because last meeting, or no, before the Code presentation, we're clearly saying that the schedule for is 15 with Decode and 22nd is Elfo. Oh, there are people go joining. Okay. Now everyone is popping up.
Yep, and there's Paul.
Hey.
So when we have Paul, we have quorum.
Okay, looks good. People joining.
And a reminder to our race, we'll see.
Hey, Pops.
Hello. Sorry, I haven't been able to join earlier, but I keep missing it. Hi, Jim.
While we wait for other people to join, maybe a question. Are we going to have our Meerkat annual meeting? Because I know that the other hub have started doing that. For instance, Chime had their first annual meeting.
We had talked about it. I think
Oh, I was not sorry. That
at
is my
least
fault.
one of our prior meetings, but we didn't. I don't think we quite had a quorum of the PI team present for that. We talked about we didn't really get into timing. We talked a little bit about format, and I think there was some consensus or some belief expressed that it might make sense to do this with a subset of PIs rather than the whole PI team, because it would that might make it a little unwieldy. And also we might want to do it in proximity to Germantown to make it easier for the DOE staff to attend. If that's the objective of the review, is to have some interaction with them because they often find it difficult to travel. But of course, with the government shutdown, you know, I think we'd probably need to wait in any case until that's over for public facing or quasi public facing events, or events that require a lot of expenditure of government funds to host, that the timing might not be right for that while there's a shutdown. At least that's would be my concern, I guess. But that doesn't mean we can't start planning it now.
But also, we were talking about having much clearer directives maybe from our program managers, what they would be expecting from us when reporting, because there is no really reason to have such meeting without knowing what to report and having, you know, people from them, from DOE. I mean, this was also mentioned last time that I think someone was supposed to figure it out. Oh, maybe Valerie was supposed to look at that.
What was I supposed to?
So but at what DOE program managers are expecting, frankly, from us as reporting materials when we plan our annual meeting for MIRCAT?
Oh, that part. So I did talk to Pavel when because he was in the area and stopped by Argonne. So it's unclear when they're going to request a report from us. And so, you know, and I was telling him that we're just moving forward with our collaboration plan as to what was described in the plan. And he was like, great. And that was all we said. And then he moved on to the American Science Cloud. So we had, you know, we did give him an update on what we're doing with BIA, but in terms of, you know, looking also at the centers in general, yeah, that was just like a 2 or 3 minute conversation.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to get their attention. I mean, even without the government shutdown business, they were very, I mean, we've been waiting for quite a while to get to receive feedback on our original collaboration plan. In this team, we've been collecting up papers and trying to get things sort of ready so that if a report request comes, it won't be that difficult for us to respond to it. But we ought to think about having having a plan for a review, or at least for an annual meeting, and how we want to structure that.
Right.
Maybe we can make that the topic of our next PI meeting, is just trying to work through that.
Right. And what about the working groups? Because I think we were all looking at names for the working groups so that we can at least move forward with the 4 working groups.
Mm-hmm.
Have forward movement there. Such that, and I think what we had discussed previously was to have one person from each project serve on an initial working group team. And mm-hmm. that way that team can lay out a plan for that working group maybe over the next 18 months. And then using that plan, we get others engaged and they can use that plan as a starting point. But mm-hmm. it's much easier to work with 8 people than 30 people when the page is blank. So.
Yeah, so let's have these as our 2 agenda items for our next meeting next week, and as you know, we're going to launch a new meeting series with a different Zoom link, and that will be coming in the next day or so.
Okay. And so that Zoom meeting, that's where we have the PIs and also a deputy or
Yeah,
alternate. So
that's
it's
right.
two people per project for
That's
that.
right.
Okay. Yes.
Sounds good.
Okay, so maybe we switch to our L4 because we are working, we're waiting to start. Is it
Yes,
okay?
I know, and we want to make sure you have enough time, Grigor. So please, so the purpose of this meeting is to see to have a an overview of the ELFO team and what their plans are.
Yes, so hopefully you can see my screen. Can you see my screen?
Yep.
Looks
Yes.
good.
Yes.
So we'll be switching between trusts during the presentation, but I will start with introduction and covering trust one, and then my colleagues will also be covering trust two, trust three, and maybe let's start with that. So the outline of the presentation is first part going to be about project organization, so some words of introduction, motivation, discussing electrophotonic interface and silicon photonic platforms available for realization of the project. Then at a high level, project objectives and trust will be covered, and then project design, stack and tools, because we are actually covering several layers of approaches from materials up to the system level. And then we cover three trusts of within ELFO: trust one, trust two, trust three. Then a bit testing, investment in equipment, because it's essential for this project. So I don't have to remind you how this project actually was generated, because we are part of the Meerkat Center. The Meerkat Center, we have eight projects. In ELFO, we have collaborators from Brookhaven, Columbia University, CUNY, CCNY, and FIU, Florida International University, and PNNL. We have a great industrial liaison, New York CREATES, represented here by Pops, and also we have industrial collaborator with Cadence. So you can look a bit some details at our websites that are under construction, of course, one about ELFO and another one about Meerkat Center. Generally speaking, the second one is under construction. We are actually now getting some help from a company to get it, quicker up to the level that could be good for our center. So maybe let's jump to motivation, because whenever you have any commercialization, training, you always being told you should address customer needs. And our, working on developments of highly granular detectors for the electron-ion collider, that is a flagship project at Brookhaven, we re realized that we are suffering in such great scale systems from congestion in delivering resources and taking data. So what is shown here in red is all that congestion of wires, cables, delivering power, taking signals out, and basically some areas we have already more material than is expected. And this object is very, very complex. We are using large-scale silicon detectors that are bent to make them thin. So level of complexities that are present here is gigantic. And particularly in the center of the detector, we have so-called monolithic active pixel sensor, a silicon vertex tracker that is made of large-scale detectors as one big part of silicon wafer. This is a 12-inch wafer, and one sensor is effectively marked as this red rectangle. And here, there are multiple units producing a lot of data. And they are from one such long tail. We have 6 10 gigabit per second drivers. Okay, so we started scratching our heads how to actually handle all that. And the first place we were thinking about jumping into photonics, very close to the endpoint of such a long slab of monolithic sensor. We are thinking about delivering power through light and also taking data using photonics approach. So we are thinking about designing a photonic IC that will be, taking the 6 bit, 6 times 10 gigabit per second link out of the detector. So we realized that there are existing good commercially mature processes that where you can do silicon photonics already. So this was actually our starting point, thinking about the L4 project or L4 scope. And then we realized that effectively when you start doing wavelength division multiplexing that is very advantageous for transferring data, you can actually obtain very high speeds of transmission, but using multiple links. Here the plot shows, for example, this is a borrow from our collaborator from Columbia, that if we go with multiple wavelengths, which they typically are multiplex on single photonic fiber, we can actually get speeds that are very, very high. At the same time, we can save a lot of energy. So this is actually what we somehow and previously already we tried to actually address by multiple streams of 10 gigabit per second on using different wavelengths. And that wavelength division multiplexing will be appearing through our presentation several times because this is underlying technology for also performing in photonic computing. We'll be talking later. Okay, later. Now, when you look at the photonic system, how they are constructed nowadays, when you have typically photonic system, photonic elements sitting a bit on the side of electronic circuits, when you have pluggable optics, fibers for data transmission. But if we think about embedded photonics, which is subject of our project, we bring the photonics inside the hybrids, having all the elements ranging from memory, processors, drivers, sensing, all on one stack. So knowing that we have some experience already in the past in hybrid 3D integration, I mean, for example, we've been involved in the development of 3D stacked fully fusion bonded detector that was composed of sensor, analog layer, digital layer. We started already having, we have something in our pocket that we have a hybridization in 3D stacking. Also, when we have our collaborators working on high speed multiplexing on data using COMB wavelength division multiplexed principle, we can have processing added by having electro-optical modulators embedded in the flow of data before even reaching the final destination when data is stuck. Okay, so we realize we have components that are available in our hands. So we thought that L4 project can actually have such a structure. We may have generic detector that is instead read out electrically, can be read out photonically, but having conversion to the photonics as close as possible to the signal generation part. Then when we transfer photonic data out, we can perform already significant level of processing on the fly processing in the photonic domain using advantages of addition of light and also using the wavelength division multiplex, as I said earlier. But later, towards the end, we can also equip such a data acquisition system in electrophotonic high data throughput processing, when you can have neural networks non-Feynman processing embedded. And this is why we created three trusts. Trust one is electrophotonic detector. Trust two is on-the-fly data processing, and trust three is electrophotonic processors. And those are the three trusts that we have in our L4 project. So trust one focuses on devices and interfaces, system characterization and modeling, application-driven device optimization. Trust two is on-the-fly data processing with a focus on enablers and interconnects, partitioning of data, because certain functions will be discussed later can be optimally realized in electrical domain, certainly in photonic domain. And trust three is processor operation beyond von Neumann architectures, where we harness advantages of electrical and photonic signals. And these three trusts are tied together with co-design approach, that is heterogeneous integration, high bandwidth interfaces between Trust 1 and Trust 2, and co-design architectures between Trust 2, Trust, and Trust 3. And all of us, we are aiming towards energy efficiency in an extreme environment, as was our funding proposal plan. So projects, objectives, and trusts. As I mentioned, we have myself. I'm the leader of ELFO. We have great industrial liaison. We have project manager. We have Trust One led by myself and Alex from Colombia. Trust Two led by Sumyajit, who is present in the room, and Karen, who couldn't join us today, unfortunately. And Trust Three led by Jim and Prashansa. And also we have Ocean connected to us. And we identified major technological component, because without that it's difficult to convey such scale of project ranging from material to system. We work with AIM Photonics, GlobalFoundries, Tower Semiconductor. Especially the last one is for the sensing part. So we were thinking significantly, from where we should be actually starting, and we realized that existing commercial grade electrophotonic platforms are already equipped with a lot of elements that could be harnessed by us, and we can start constructing the systems. Also, we have having access to more laboratory scale silicon photonic platforms, and also beyond silicon photonics platform, we can enhance this portfolio. And I think from electrical photonic modulation, certainly we have in existing platforms, electroabsorption modulators, phase interferometric modulators. We have also some much more advanced hybrid electro-optical modulators. Going back from photonic to electrical, we have direct photodiodes based on also on germanium. We have avalanche photodiodes, balanced photodetectors, heterodyne coherent detector. All of that is available on the platforms that could be used for our needs. And then application in data computation, we have high-speed data links. We have models for neuromorphic artificial intelligence accelerations, sensors. So all that enables actually what we realize, closed-loop electrophotonic systems for transmission, computation, and sensing. And this is where we embedded our three trusts. So the stack, the ELFO design stack and tools. In ELFO project, we are starting with materials and devices, going up vertically, reaching algorithms and applications. And at each level of this stack, we need to have different tools, and the tools are essential, because when we're designing systems, we need to have models ranging from high precision device going all the way up to high abstraction levels. So here are listed the tools, and boundaries between trusts are shared between certain types of the tools. So we have multi-physics device modeling we exploited, mixed electrophotonic circuit simulators, analysis of EM/ER signal and power integrity, and then on the top we have processing architecture modeling, functional simulator for simulation for the design. So today, tools versus needed tools, because we certainly the much very mature are tools for electrical design. So there are vendors available that making tools available, but photonics EDA is still fragmented and immature. So this is also what we plan to cover a bit in our ELFO to cover this gap with our approaches that will be aiming at development of the tools. So this maybe slide is a bit bulky. I will skip going into details, but this can be taken as a reference. So we put on the left side existing industry-grade tools. So this is for stable, this is very stable for silicon photonic processes. But what is missing is uncharted territory that we are planning to cover in ELFO on the right side. So I will probably skip it in interest of time to allow covering more our trusts. But this is good compendium of kind of market research also on this rich portfolio, and sometimes also quite expensive if it goes to the commercial tools packages. But when we want to bridge the gap between photonic circuits and electrical circuits and going all the way up to high level of abstraction, the tools are largely missing, and we are having this also gap addressed in our project. So maybe now going to TRUST-I, I will still cover TRUST-I, and then I will give microphone to my colleagues. So in TRUST-I, as I mentioned, this focused on electrophotonically readout sensors, and the inspiration for this development was effectively is coming from the fact that in photonic domain we can realize quite easily linear operations where we have analog values that are represented in amplitude of light, coupled to other waveguides using couplers, resonant circuits, that we can assign different weights to them. And by doing this, we can actually construct XY readout that can be fully going on the photonic domain. So this is like a kind of transfer, a bit of knowledge or experience from computing in photonics to developing fully read out in photonic manner detector like monolithic active pixel sensors. And of course, we have to go through several layers, starting from the front-end layer, which is detector sensor itself, then the conversion layer from electrical to photonic domain, data transport, and application. So having all these elements achieved in TRUST-I, we can develop monolithic active pixel sensor with 3D stacked photonic readout. And our idea is shown maybe on this slide in more details. So when we have the first layer physical of sensor and analog front end that is shown here, that this layer, of course, detects signals and it feeds electro-optical modulators that are receiving signals from waveguides, where we have multiple wavelengths sent over there. And then we have these electro-optical modulators sensitive to specific wavelengths and coupling to the output fiber, where we can read already modulated light. So if there is signal, for example, in a given channel, we can encode addresses, and we can read at unprecedented speed, incomparable to whatever is possible to be achieved in electrical domain. So the cross sections are also shown here, that what we plan. So having, of course, 3D stacked approach with sensor electrical layer and electro-optical layer added in the stack. How we plan to actually realize this, the tasks. So we can fabricate, of course, sensors or electrical layers and on the full scale wafers. And this is why we have also tower in our equation, that we can develop the sensing as a monolithic system and add photonic circuits using chip on wafer stacking to have photonic layer attached to the electrical layer. Of course, one part of our TRUST-I is also development of very efficient coupling that is suitable for extreme environment, including cryogenic temperatures. And also another part of this TRUST-I is multi-physics simulation and modeling, because we are not only merging layers as heterogeneous materials, but also two different domains, electrical and photonic. So all that needs to be carefully modeled, and is also solidly planned in TRUST-I. So the optimization of the process, and this is where we have advantage of working in laboratory scale, maybe not laboratory scale, not commercial grade foundry, where we can optimize also basic components such as resonant microdisk modulators. And here is an example of work performed by Columbia, where optimizing microdisk modulators by having some undercut technique, we can increase sensitivity of tuning. This actually is shown by having a plot at different powers used for modulation, how wide the spectrum of modulation wavelength we can resonance we can obtain. So I think this is advantage of working with a foundry that is not only hermetically closed for achieving data transmission, but also on R&D, and this is part of Trust One efforts. And probably with this, I will pass baton to Trust Two, and Sumyajit will cover Trust Two.
Okay. So to continue, so once the data has been generated, so the Thrust 2 is the focus of Thrust 2 is to process the data while it's moving. So moving away from the idea of the interconnect just being a passive interconnect in like a wire to see if it can do some processing that is useful. So in the as Gregor already mentioned, the main enabler here is wavelength precision multiplexing, because we have this additional degree of freedom in optics because of the huge bandwidth that we can actually pack thousands of hundreds to thousands of wavelengths, each modulated individually at pretty high rates, in tens of gigabits per second, onto a single fiber. And this gives us very, very large bandwidths. And the way this typically works is that you have a continuous wave laser that gets modulated by these microresonators. These are group velocity dispersion tweaked microresonators. You get this Kerr effect, and that gives you this comb. The comb can then be individually deinterleaved through this tree network. So each of these gives you is a splitter, and then the splitter is connected in a tree. So then once that has been split up, each of these individual wavelengths can then be modulated, and then you can recombine them. So now you have a bunch of modulated tones that are on the same fiber. These can be translated or, I mean, transferred over the fiber, single mode fiber typically, and then deinterlaced again at the other end, detected and then passed on for further processing, which could be done electrically or could be further optical processing if you don't put the photodiodes. So this is the generic framework that you can use. But then the work done at Columbia, and particularly Karen's group, has really taken this to the next level to look at how efficiently you can actually transfer data using this, and the results they get are pretty promising. You can get less than a picojoule per bit and multi terabits per link, terabits per second per link. Next slide. Yeah. So in this context, the additional degree of freedom that the wavelength division multiplexing WDM gives you is that you get this additional degree of freedom for processing data. And the one way to look at this is to compare how you might do a very common operation, such as a convolution operation, in a traditional, let's say, digital accelerator like a GPU, versus an analog in-memory accelerator, which is shown in the middle, versus a photonic tensor core, which is shown on the right. And here, the tensor really means that now you have this additional degree of freedom in your vector, which means another dimension which you can use to do multiple matrix vector multiplications in one step, as opposed to a traditional approach or digital, which is sequential, or even in-memory computing, where you do it in one step. But now you can go beyond that and do n of these operations in parallel. So it's massive parallelism, very very high computational throughput. So something that Karen's group has been working on is to take advantage of this, couple this with another key enabling technology here, which is a wavelength selective switch. So WSS is a wavelength selective switch, and this is basically the analog of a router, but in the optical domain. And the key idea here is that it's actually you can take any wavelength to at one of the input ports and route it to one of the other output ports. And this gives you switching, arbitrary switching inside an optical network. Now, the interesting thing is this is a fully passive structure. So, in terms of power consumption, it doesn't add, but then it's also very high data rates, because again, you're doing it with fiber. So it, compared to an optical, sorry, compared to an electrical router, you get these advantages. And this lets you conceptually now build up a hierarchical network where you have this these modules, which they call B cubes, which have a computational unit, the CU. Right next to it is one of these with is a silicon photonics I/O with one of these WSS multiplexing several of these cubes together. Now you can take this structure, which is just say one layer, and recursively extend that to hierarchically as many layers as you like. And this lets you build up these very high bandwidth networks with optical switching of the optical circuit switching of the connections. And this can, I mean, they have demonstrated experimentally and also through some simulations that this typically gives you something like 10x or 10x more bandwidth per say watt, or 10x more energy efficiency for data transmission than an equivalent of a state-of-the-art InfiniBand or other wired electrical network. So this can be very useful if you're doing operations that require a large amount of data transfer, particularly, for example, if you're doing distributed training of deep neural nets, when you have operations like broadcast, which have to go out across the internet. So this is a good example of how the optics, in this case, passive optics, passive optical switching, is doing some computation, some useful computation on the fly, you know, during transmission, because we have these data getting routed arbitrarily through the network, programmably through the network. So like I was saying, you can do this hierarchically, build it up layer by layer. People, they have demonstrated in simulations and experiments, you know, several layers of hierarchy. So, and this lets you, in principle, go to arbitrary network sizes. And this is called SiPAC, the Silicon Photonic Accelerated Computer Architecture. So another example, which is also related to this, is doing more computation while the data is being transferred between computational unit and memory. So instead of the memory bus being just a data transfer bus, it can do some processing while the data is being transferred. And this can reduce, this can do several things. For example, you can use this for compression, or you can use this for doing some reduction and some reduction in, and that can give you system level advantages such as reduction in latency or reduction in overall energy use. So you can imagine now we have these on, as shown on the left, we have these photonic compute engines which are leveraging 3D integration, as Gregor mentioned, which are now co-packaged with the optics, getting very, very high throughput and processing data through these WDM buses as they're moving. So one kind of concrete example of this, which they published recently, is a sort of innovative approach to doing multiply accumulate operations, which are, as everybody knows, the one of the core operations for all these AI engines. So the way this works is that you have a multi-layer stack, again, 3D integration with several layers of high bandwidth memory DRAM stacked on top. Below that, you have an electrical IC, and below that is a photonic IC. The data, the coefficients that you want to multiply are stored in DRAM. They get transferred to the electrical IC, which calculates partial products, which are basically just multiplies. But then when you want to do the addition, you transfer that to the photonic IC, which then does the addition. Moreover, the output light then goes back controlling, and then is used to control the level of light, which can then can tell you, which then through basically what amounts to a flash type to digital conversion, that says how many of the outputs of the of these photodiodes are actually high or low. So that gives you this thermometer coded output, which means you have done this photonic analog to digital conversion quite efficiently in parallel, again, because we are doing this with a bunch of resonators which are thermally tuned. So then we have this. Okay, now in terms of performance achieved, this is still not at a high resolution. I mean, the typical exact number of bits is on the order of 3 to 4 as of now. You know, work is going on to increase that, but I'll say that already for a lot of applications, even 4 bits of precision is good enough. And so this is a compelling way to actually implement these MAC operations and digitize the in analog, and then digitize them efficiently in the photonic domain. So this is more of a blow up of how that might actually be implemented. Like I said, the high bandwidth memory modules are on top. You have the IC, electrical IC in the middle, active photonic interposer, and then everything is sitting on a package. Everything is then interposed on a substrate. And yeah, this is more of a blow up of the algorithm. Like I said, the partial products are actually, this is a good example actually of something that will be talked about in Thrust 3, which is how different operations might be partitioned between domains. You can see here the multiplications are done which is nonlinear operation and done electrically, but then the linear addition, which can be efficiently done optically, is done optically. So this might be a good example, or maybe a good point to actually hand over to the to thrust three, which I think is coming up, and we'll talk more about partitioning. Yes.
Okay, so the thrust three will be shared between Prashant and Ocean, right?
Yeah. Okay, so I'll provide an overview, and then Ocean, who's from PNNL, will provide more details. So in Thrust 3, our objective really is to develop electrophotonic processing architectures and make use of all the different pieces, all the insights gained from Thrust 1 and Thrust 2 in doing so. And for building these architectures, we'd like to leverage all the benefits of processing in photonic domain. And while we're trying to build these mixed electrophotonic processing architectures, our goal really is to also develop frameworks, tools, and methodologies which allow us to systematically develop these architectures following a top design, a top-down design approach as opposed to a bottoms-up approach. And we'd like to automate how we do our architecture search. We'd like to make the architecture search hardware aware, taking into account all the constraints coming from the processing platform that we use. And the target application for these processing architectures, one is developing optimized processing architectures for processing of data that's produced by detectors, but also something more generic, such as processing generic AI workloads. And one of the key principles that we'll follow in Thrust 3 is that we'd like to optimally partition tasks between electrical and photonic domains so as to best exploit the properties of each domain. And while doing that, we would like to model all our interfaces, both digital analog and electrical optical interfaces, as well as the conversion costs associated with the interfaces, and also try and mitigate the conversion costs as we do the architecture search. The kind of architectures and applications that we are targeting. Applications range, it's data processing, processing of the data that's produced by detectors at various points of the detector pipeline, ranging from, say, data compression and filtering, which is closer to the sensor, to developing low latency feedback, as well as generating trigger signals at low latencies. At the other end, it could be offloading tasks like particle track reconstruction, clustering calorimeter hits, and doing this in a more energy efficient manner than a typical electronic only hardware accelerator would do. And then there are several choices for the processing architectures for doing one or multiple of these tasks. So in Thrust 3, we'd like to explore both. First, the suitability of different architectures for doing these different compute operations, and also how photonics can be leveraged how photonics can be leveraged specific to each of these different architectures. The architectures range from deep neural networks, where we implement dense MAC operations, spiking neural networks, doing combinatorial optimization using Ising machines, and also graph neural networks, which are of particular interest here. The reason being that the data that's produced by detectors is often sparse, irregular, least structured. There are complex dependencies between the different pixels, different detector subsystems, and such data maps naturally to graphs. So we think graph neural networks can do a good job of processing the data that we typically see coming out of these detectors. As I said, one of the key drivers of Thrust 3 is doing optimal electrophotonic design partitioning, and there's more coming on this from our colleagues in PNNL. But the approach here that we follow is that we try to implement optimization loops within our architecture search engine, where we define performance, cost trade-offs. We define key metrics which should be taken into account. These are some of the partitioning drivers that are shown here. Could be latency, power consumption, bandwidth throughput, how reliable is the architecture, as well as the noise resilience. And in the functional simulator that we develop, we do a hardware-aware behavioral modeling. So we try to model our components as close as possible to what we might realistically see, given the fabrication process. So we'd like to model non-idealities, crosstalk, losses, thermal drift, as well as conversion efficiencies between different domains, and make use of all these different parameters as we do our design space exploration, as well as parameter optimization. As for task division, our initial starting point is allocating linear operations to photonic domain, because that's what photonic is really good at, doing nonlinear operations in electrical domain for the time being, until material advances allow us to do nonlinear operations efficiently in photonic domain. But this is just a starting point, and we hope to get more insights from our partitioning algorithm. And also make use of photonic interconnects wherever possible for doing energy efficient data transmission, mitigating bottlenecks associated with moving data between the memory and the compute units. And as we evaluate these different architectures, wherever possible, we are trying to make use of publicly available physics-based data sets, which are all derived from experiment-like conditions. Our goal is to use these data sets for rigorous benchmarking of the processing architectures. One example is the TrackML data set that we're using for evaluating GNNs for doing particle trap reconstruction. And I think that's it for me. I'll pass over to Ocean.
Yes. So we navigate, right?
Is that okay if we navigate?
Yeah, you guys can navigate. I'll just say next slide when I need to get to the next slide. So yeah, hi, I'm Ocean. I will be talking about what we've been working on at PNNL as part of ELFO. So the partitioning problem that was mentioned earlier, we took it into the different directions. So one is essentially, what is the architecture we are looking at? Are we going to be looking at using certain components as electronic components and certain components as photonic components? Bear in mind that there are components that can be either photonic or electronic, so you also have to decide for those, which refer to those as flexible components. So one of the ideas with that partitioning is that regular electronic computers are hitting a wall. They need a massive amount of power to run faster, whereas new photonic technology could help, but we don't know how to combine them with the electronic components quite yet in an effective manner. So the tool that we are building currently uses Monte Carlo to essentially try different combinations until it converges to a point based on the metrics that Prasancha mentioned earlier. And another approach that we're looking at is called hypergraph partitioning. This is a approach that our colleague Jisun is bringing to the table and has been working on to integrate as part of our code base. Basically, we're creating algorithms that will decide which computing task or which computing node would be what type. So we would also work on allocating a certain task to a certain node and whether that node is a photonic node or electronic node. So it's a multidimensional problem that we're trying to break down and work step by step. Next slide. So before I go too deep into the weeds of the technical approach, these are some of the libraries that we've been looking at. So we've had like libraries like MEEP that are used to simulate how light travels through photonic chips. We've looked at ngSpice, which simulates electronic circuits, PyMTL, which models digital logic, KLAL, PyTorch, GamPy. We've also explored some electronic photonic partitioning approach, such as MEDIS, I'm not going to try to pronounce the rest of them. It's on the side. But yeah, we've also looked at those approaches because we do want to get some knowledge of a baseline partitioning approach specifically that has been developed for electronic photonic, so that once our tool has been fully developed, we can then compare it to existing state of the art. Next slide, please. So right now, we are working on a version of our partitioning tool that uses Monte Carlo search to find a good combination of electronic component, photonic components. As you can see on the video here, we have both a baseline one where we are just simply running a streamline of data and then seeing how we want to create the different partitioning approaches. We do generate graphs of the different partitioning that is generated. We also give the user the ability to change the power or the latency as constraint as part of our interface. We will be working on integrating more constraints later down the line. The code already has the capability, just need to bring them up to the interface. We also do have a state of the code where we are essentially running not only Monte Carlo approach, where we're testing out the different performance factors of the different nodes, but we are also running and training the neural network model based on essentially the TensorFlow library, and then we're incorporating back the performance of the TensorFlow library into the resulting performance of the chip, and then that is taken into account for the loss of the model and we're gathering the loss of the model by taking into account both the performance and the TensorFlow output. So that does take a while to finish. In the meantime, I'll also talk about another approach that will not be shown in the video quite yet, which is essentially the hypergraph approach, which will go more into the next slide over. We will be integrating that one into, oh, I think the video is over. Next slide, sorry.
Next slide, okay.
So our second approach treats the problem like a puzzle. So essentially we represent the electronic and photonic components as dots and their connections as lines linking multiple dots together, which create what we call a hypergraph. First, we simplify this complex puzzle by grouping related components together. We can then only group components that belong to the same category or have a strong connection, kind of like sorting puzzle pieces by color or pattern. Next, we make a first guess as to how to divide everything between the electronic and photonic parts, trying to keep things as balanced as possible. Again, we refer back to those metrics that were talked about at the beginning. And finally, we improved our solution by testing small changes for each component we asked, would moving this piece to the other side make things better? We focus on important improvements, first using priority weights. And this code is currently in a working phase in the background of the code of our code base. We still have yet to connect it to our interface, but the goal would be that we would have this and the Monte Carlo approach connected to the interface so that we can do actually a comparison between the partitioning approaches on both and come up with a what we refer to as potentially an ensemble approach that gives us a overwhelming positive partitioning solution that both includes task distribution and the selection of different components for different partitions. Thank you.
Okay, so probably now to close, I will show a couple maybe more slides because we, to realize the goals of our ELFO project, of course we need a huge simulation engines, software, models, but also one cannot forget about investment in testing equipment, because having anything fabricated requires testing and is jumping from electrical domain to the photonic domain, electrophotonic domain, that has to be addressed. And we are working also on equipping our laboratory spaces. So I think certainly this slide is coming from the Columbia University, that it's an electrophotonic probe station for allowing for dior wafer probing, this investment of infrastructure for testing. It also happening in our at our colleagues facility at CUNY CCNY, and our colleagues at Florida University are investing in finite element methods simulation tools. And at Brookhaven, we are also investing in a new laboratory space that is we call it new test lab facilities located at instrumentation department, where we already have 12-inch semi-automatic probe station. Now we're adding photonic package on top of it, where we'll be able to test electrical and photonic chips on the wafers on single dies with edge coupling of single fibers, ribbon fibers. So all that is needed later on to explore, especially particularly at AIMED 3D integrated stacks. That will be needing to access such stacks with very high precision. So this investment is ongoing. We're also looking into development of in-house capabilities such as photonic wire bonding to have through using polymeric wires to be able to interconnect photonic ICs. So these investments are happening in parallel. They are part of ELFO project, but also generally enhancement of capabilities at instrumentation department at the Brookhaven National Laboratory. But this brings me also to this brings me to summary. And in summary, I would like to say that ELFO is a very intense project. Spans a full chain from concept through design, fabrication, finally to testing. We cover manufacturing of electrophotonic circuit prototypes. We pursue heterogeneous integration. We require advanced test and characterization infrastructure. We drive development of new CAD EDA tools and methodologies for the designing. And when I was talking about special investment in the testing architecture or testing infrastructure, certainly it's great to be part of Mirkat Center, because certainly this is why we are having all these presentations happening in front of Mirkat Center members. We seek for synergies within Mirkat and also outside. So we rely on external foundry facilities. We mix commercial and open source design flows, and we have huge exposure or overlap already. We can notice that with Decode project, that is another project within Mirkat. I would like to also stress that was a great experience for me, particularly attending the SINT annual meeting that took place in Santa Fe a bit more than 1 month ago, when there was a lot of exposure on what is going on within the centers, and also with invited guests, and thanks to Jeff. So I think the synergies and reusing maybe some investments among Mirkat Center members could be great addition to our L4 project. And as I mentioned, we have very intense plan in front of us, and hope we'll be able to realize it. And hopefully we'll be able to grow next steps out of this, what I'm seeing as a planted seed, kind of incubate it to broader efforts. So I think we managed to be on time. So this is last slide, and thank you for your attention. Oh, if there are questions, we try to answer, or we take notes. Okay, we lost people, I guess.
Hey there. Yeah, thank you so much, Grzegorz. That was terrific. Thank you to your team as well. Really a lot of cool stuff in this project. Any questions? I guess maybe I'll kick it off with a question. Can you give us an idea of how this effort kind of compares with others that might be going on in industry that you're aware of, or in other consortia? Clearly, you're addressing some really critical topics that are relevant to many different kinds of applications in computing more broadly. So is there a fairly well developed set of projects out there that are doing other things, or is this pretty unique?
Oh, I would maybe partially answer the question, and I later ask my colleagues to add, because that everyone may have slightly different opinions. I would say that when we started, this I brought the motivation slides at the beginning, because a few years ago when we started talking about reaching for photonics, we were told, or we also were thinking, that photonics is great for data transmission, because you cannot stop photons, you cannot do computation. Slowly, we start seeing many efforts emerging or advancing, especially at universities, at the first place, to use photonics for computation. You may, of course, as Prashant mentioned, consider operating and purely on amplitude. You can also work with phase, with interferometric approaches. Of course, you don't stop photons, but you can get these linear operations, multiplication and addition, very efficiently and very fast. And what is actually exceeding speed of these computations, even up to two orders of magnitude comparing to electrical domain, is wavelength division multiplexing. You cannot imagine on a single wire to have 100 frequencies multiplex and then demultiplex them, because resonance circuit will be gigantic and will be bad. But in photonics, it starts to be possible. So you can get a factor of acceleration 10x, 100x in computation. Whether it is something unique or not, probably It is not, it cannot be said it is totally unique because, for example, efforts that Columbia colleagues are doing is oriented on the data center, and they're operating on funding from companies that are either investing towards the future or aiming at new technology development. And we started seeing that in photonic computing is really emerging, and the platforms, particularly silicon photonics, started to be available, where you have all elements needed for linear operations. You start seeing also the platforms that are non-silicon based, where you can mix non-linear operations. I will not be going into these details because probably it will take a bit more time than needed. You have also heterogeneous embedment of, for example, lasers in the silicon photonics. So these things are trends, I think, in the industry. But we try to have our L4 project aimed at what DOE could be interested in. And of course, if something happens that we are able to sell this our findings to industry, it would be greatest achievement. I don't know. You want to add anything?
The only other thing is about, so part of ELF is also focused on developing tools and methodologies.
Oh, yes.
And for photonics specifically, commercially available EDA tools are not as matured as electronics. So we are hoping that some of the R&D that we do can eventually become part of commercial tools as well.
Yeah.
And also,
that makes a lot of sense.
What Prashansa was covering in her part, partitioning. What to cover in the photonic domain and what to cover in electrical domain. We are at a very early stage of that because we are still discussing how to define weight function, for the automated optimization. But when we get this somehow, I mean, this certainly can trigger, I hope, huge interest from industry to embed it in the regular tools. And of course, now we are focusing on partitioning between photonic and electrical domain using known components that exist in the silicon photonic platform, but we can expand it. And the most important thing is that we skip handmade photonic layouts, photonic implementation, because now when you go into Cadence and you start using, even the very sophisticated tool like Kirby Core to avoid drawing waveguides, you have to do it by hand. But if you are able to automate the process from top to bottom, from the concept of GNN, like Prashansa was describing, through partitioning between domains and then like synthesis in the electrophotonic domain, I think this can be breakthrough. Whether we'll achieve it, we'll see. Maybe in collaborations with others, this can be a huge addition to automate effectively this type of efforts. I don't know, anyone wants to add? We can ask our advisor, industrial advisor. Bob, do you have anything to add?
No, I don't think I have much to add. I know you're working closely with AIM Photonics and no, nothing much to add.
Okay, any other questions? Well, if not, we're pretty much at time. So thanks so much to the ELFO team for a great presentation. There was a lot there. And we're going to closely review the recording of this. I want to share this with some of our colleagues in my team because I think they'll really benefit from seeing it, and there's some I see some opportunities for collaborations that could emerge, and so it's been great to see this, and really exciting to see what your team does during this this Meerkat Center project.
Yes, indeed. Yes, we have some someone that's doing work in optical interconnects, so I definitely want to share the recording there as well.
So I think we're happy to, go maybe more details if someone is interested in kind of going into details, because we actually do high-speed jet fly over what we plan, but we wanted to cover a whole set part of ideas that we are having going, as I said earlier, from materials okay. Modification, but limited to all the way to high level abstraction, realization of models for computing.
Okay, Horace, I'm sure you're still talking with Rachtum here. Just making
Yes,
sure.
yes. We are planning to have what I call workshop. Invite him. He shared with us cool stuff. What he's doing, and effectively, we already found. I mean, at least I found synergies because tackling on the problems of on-the-fly processing in photonic domain. He was showing certain things for images that he's interested. You know, some objects identification, and this is exactly what. Is common between his work and, for example, what we have in particle physics, even that we have something's changing quickly, and you would like to catch that. And I
Sure.
think what he was particularly what he was showing to us was great achievements in compression of sparse data sets. This is something that we would like to look closer working with with him.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Cool. Thanks so much. I've got to jump onto another call, but this was terrific. And we'll have a PI only discussion next week. We can talk about those two agenda items. The initial planning for an annual meeting, and also see if, oh our subcommittees or our sub teams and how we want to populate those. So we'll pick that up next time, and be on the lookout for a new. I think you should see these the current calendar invitations deleted and replaced by new ones starting for next Wednesday.
Very good. I'm glad that we didn't go over time too much.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank
Thank
you.
you.
Cheers.
Thank you again.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank
Bye.
you.